everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson, and I'm back to host once again. Scott and Joris are joining me as always. Guys, how are you doing this evening?
Hi, everyone. Hope you're all well. Well, if it isn't holiday season, I've already started drinking my festive stash of Belgian beers, and I'm in the middle of reading about Bella Gutmann at the moment.
I'm not. But I will be going to Belgium soon, so maybe I will have some beers later on as well, but not yet.
Take some out.
For now, it's still a slightly busy period at work right before Christmas. I think many people can relate to that, but yes. And also, it seems to calm down slowly now, so that's good.
Yeah, hopefully for all you listeners, it is starting to slow down a little bit. For those of you that do get the time off, not everyone does, but hopefully we can add some relaxation to your week as we talk through all the action from the Belgian Pro League. Kicked off on Friday evening, Vestelo, they beat Eupen 2-0. Leuven lost at home on Saturday 2-1 to Cercle Bruges. Molenbeek got an important win. They beat St. Truiden 3-0 at home. The Walloon derby was the Snor derby, 0-0 between Standard Liège and Charleroi. Club Bruges got a 2-0 win over Ghent on Sunday lunchtime. Union kept up their winning ways with a 1-0 win over Mechelen. Antwerp drew 1-1 with Anderlecht, and Genk heaped some more misery on Kortrijk with a 4-0 win to round out the weekend. Let's start in Vestelo. Vestelo against Eupen. Rick de Mil in charge of Vestelo, of course. Up against Florian Kerfeld's Eupen side. And to be honest, Vestelo were well worthy of the win in this one, in my opinion. They ended the game with 20 shots, 2.56 XG as well on top of that. But it took them a while to actually take the lead. Not until the second half did Niklas Madsen give them a 1-0 lead. And that was courtesy of a nice little deflection. We just kind of loot the ball over poor Gabriel Slanina into the back of the net. Eupen then conceded a penalty just a couple of minutes later. Madsen stepped up again to make it 2-0 to Vestelo. And that is how this one finished. You could see, guys, couldn't you? Rick de Mil looked pretty happy with that first result. He knew how important those 3 points were. It moves Vestelo right up to the top of that bottom four, which is quite nice for them. Whereas for Eupen, they kind of had a good opportunity for them to try and get out of there. But they just looked really, really kind of lacking any sort of attacking threat up front for pretty much all of the game, in my opinion. They had some nice play getting into kind of attacking areas, but the moment they got in and around the box, they just kind of looked a little bit clueless. Looked like they just are crying out for some sort of striking option to come in January. But whether they're going to be active or not, we just don't know. No one really knows what the situation is there with how much funds are going to be available or anything like that. But safe to say, guys, for Vestelo, there probably will be some funds available. Just we know that the owners are willing to spend. Although they have spent quite a bit already, so they'd probably want to stick with the squad they've got. But really good start for Rick de Mil. 2-0, nice clean sheet, 2 goals as well, 3 points, and maybe things are starting to look a little bit up for Vestelo.
Yeah, well, I think there's a sense that maybe they're turning a corner now. They've had a massive sort of 10 days or so. Obviously, they've had that win over Eupen there at the weekend, and then the previous weekend they beat Kortrijk, and they were two massive results that have kind of changed the complexion of things for them. A new T1 comes in, Rick de Mil comes in, looks very happy with himself. Reasonably good fit there, I think. He was close to getting the job last time when Jonas de Rock got it, actually, but missed out to Jonas. I think things are looking a little bit more rosy there as well, as they should. Ben's right, deserved winners, really. They're the only side that looked like they were going to score. Eupen have just no killer instinct whatsoever. That's exactly what my notes say here. One win in their last 13 now, 10 of those defeats. Only scored nine goals over those 13 games, averaging barely a goal a game at the moment, conceding over 2 goals on average, 3 shots on target on average a game this season. The stats are quite grim. And I think the issue with them is they have to find a way of breaking this cycle of going off a cliff and of doing just enough to stay in the top division. I think that's the issue there, because, you know, they have this it's like Groundhog Day with them a little bit. You know, they have a little period, usually at the start of a season, where they start reasonably brightly, rack up some points, and then it all goes south very, very dramatically. And at the moment, they're looking like, you know, they're just trying to hold on by their fingernails, unfortunately. And they just have to find a way of breaking that, I think. And it's a difficult one for Florian Kohfeldt. I mean, he was talking just last week about the injured players. I don't think the injuries coming back would make a massive difference to their form, to be honest. Obviously, looking at who's out just now, Teddy Allo, Boris Lambert, Milos Pantovic, nobody there really is going to make a massive difference to their form at the moment. And it's looking kind of grimmer for them. And there are three sides down there just now that I think are in big trouble. Kortrijk, obviously, are the obvious one. But then there's Eupen and Leuven at the moment, who are both heading in absolutely the wrong direction.
Well, for a team that was not likely to score, they had almost double the amount of shots on target as Westerlo, and Westerlo had a penalty as well. So that's in the goal they scored was also, well, I'm not sure how it's counted, but it was a bit, the other goal, I mean, of course, the first goal, it was a bit of a lucky one. So the details are also not really going their way. So the important details here, of course, so I'm not sure if it's still details, but yeah. But of course, Westerlo has a man in form who is scoring in Madsen, six goals in seven for him now. Of course, like I mentioned already, a bit fortuitously in this game as well. But yeah, and also, well, a slightly worrying sign, or maybe a good sign, I don't know. It was a clean sheet for Westerlo again, but they only got three clean sheets so far this season. Against Eupen, against Leuven, and against Kortrijk. Yes, the other teams that Scott just mentioned. So it seems like they have just about enough against those teams, which could be enough. Should be enough to stay up and maybe, but to really aim higher. Of course, in this game they could not change that since they had one of those opponents. But they will also have to get some clean sheets against other sides as well. Of course. I also felt like the penalty was a soft one, but I don't know what your guys' opinion was on that. Quite soft. You feel a bit for Kohfeldt, a bit, I suppose, but also I had a question already written down, what is the future for him at Eupen before other games happened. By the end of the weekend, nothing much deteriorated more than what they had after this game, and I also heard now somewhere now that his position is not really questioned. He's quite safe in his position, and that's a bit off the record even. So I don't think that might be a good sign for him nonetheless. Also, for Eupen, for a side that is struggling so much, I went a bit in a weird direction from the statistics this time, but the worst disciplinary records and cards in the league are now for Leuven, Kortrijk and Westerlo, while Eupen is only 13th in that classification, which might signify that, yeah, maybe they are not fighting enough in a way, although of course in this game they got a penalty against them, of course, and they made quite a few fouls. They just didn't really get the cards. I don't know the foul statistics either, but I was looking at the cards. There might be something in it that they lack a bit of fight. We know they actually do like to play, indeed like to play a bit more of a passing game, I guess, and a bit more academic than most sides in the bottom of the table. But yeah, maybe they should adapt from that. And that's actually exactly what happened with the other former German manager there, where they also fell off the cliff, whatever we're referring to so often now. And I forgot his name now, unfortunately. But two seasons ago. Yeah, and it did cost his job in the end. Let's see if Kohfeldt is indeed still well in the saddle, or if things deteriorate even further, if this position is actually questioned.
Yeah, just two quick points on Eupen. Klamer was the guy you were looking for, I think, Joyce, the guy with the funky curly hair. I think he's in the third tier of Germany at the moment, if I remember rightly.
Exactly, that wasn't.
Yeah, he again, good start and then fell off a cliff. I think, yeah, two things. One, while I was watching them, I was just thinking back to kind of when we started this podcast, when they had, I believe it was Benat San Jose as the head coach, the Spaniard, and they just played some really fun football. They had some really fun, interesting players like Agbadou, a couple of other guys. It was just a great, fun team to watch, and I always looked forward to watching Open because I just knew you were going to be entertained. And it's just watching them on the Friday night, I was like, this is just not entertaining whatsoever. Mm. And I just feel for those fans that travel because, yeah, as people know, geographically, they're quite far over, so they do have to kind of travel around a bit to watch the games, and it just really was poor. And I think with Coford, I'm kind of not surprised that his job isn't under threat, because I always felt that the signing of Coford, in terms of his profile, like, yes, he struggled post kind of Werder Bremen, and the back end of Werder Bremen, he did struggle a bit, but his profile is a lot higher than Erpen, in my opinion, in terms of like where you'd kind of position him. So I feel like the idea was that he'd come in and be able to get so much more out of this squad than anyone possibly could, and it would just kind of paper over all the cracks of recruitment and stuff, and like he would be kind of like what we saw with Blessing in Oostende, where it's just kind of like he becomes the key man and it doesn't really matter because he's so good as a coach that he can kind of mitigate all these other things. And it's just like no one can seem to mitigate these problems when he's got absolutely nothing on the bench to change the game. I mean, You look at the substitutions he made. Reagan Charles Cook, who in my opinion has probably been one of their best players in terms of attacking output, like he's got 3 goals and I think he's got a couple of assists, but he always seems to come off the bench and have an impact. Yolom Dom, decent player, like technically he's quite good, but he's not really giving you any end product. He's not really giving you anything that the other midfielders aren't going to give you. And then Jentil van Genechten, who's obviously not going to, like, yes, he scored 2 goals in a game before people raised me on that one, but I don't think he's ever going to score 2 goals again in a game. I'd be very, very shocked. So he's just got nothing. He's got nothing to play with. And that's why I can't, sacking him just wouldn't make a difference. I just think it's a pointless sacking if they did that. But I think I could see them doing it because it's just classic them.
Yes, it's what sides do, don't they? It's that when they have no other option, it's the only switch they've got to flick. It's interesting. I noticed that this week there was a fan gathering for Open fans that Kofeld and some of the players attended, with some of the leaders upstairs at the club, and he was emphasising the positive quite a lot this week, which is understandable. He was saying that he's not getting as much out of the players as he thought he would, but there's reasons for that. The injuries are one of the reasons that he gave. But he said something quite interesting. I thought he was talking about how he sees them fighting for a playoff 2 spot rather than fighting against relegation. And that's what I suppose the players want to hear, but you're looking at it at the moment and you're going, that's not really the reality of this. And the gap between where they are at the moment and that foothold and where they would maybe like to be somewhere in the playoff 2 mix is just too big at the moment, I think.
It's exactly 1 point, though, literally, difference.
Yeah, I think the issue, guys, I know what you mean. I think the issue I feel with them, guys, is I have no confidence that they're going to go on a run of maybe winning 2 or 3 games. That's the problem. There's a slightly more high likelihood that one of the other sides around them might do that, like Westerlo, obviously.
Yeah, and I don't know, you're talking about that kind of like that point differential, Joris. It's kind of funny because I just feel like Charleroi have been sat there for so long and they've had weeks to build up a massive lead over these teams. They've just not done it. We'll speak about them in a bit, but talking about kind of like bringing a new manager in, like the new manager bounce that maybe Erpen are looking for, one side that looked for that is Leuven. Scott, I won't steal your stat that you shared because I know you'll probably do it in your roundup, but Oscar Garcia's men hosted Cercle Bruges to kick off Saturday afternoon, and they got off to a great start. Natural Nsingi passed it into Tor Steinsson for him to open the scoring within 2 minutes. And yeah, again, you watch Leuven and you just think, oh, if they lose Tor Steinsson in January, they could be in real, real trouble, because he just is the key kind of player for them in terms of making things out of nothing and scoring and assisting and just trying stuff. So he gives them the lead after 2 minutes. And yeah, Cercle then do kind of come back into the game a lot more, start to get back on the ball. not kind of their ideal game in the sense that they had over 50% possession, which is not very Cercle Bruges at all. But they just couldn't find any way back into the game until the second half. They get a set piece in around about the 58th minute. Ball comes in. Darlan heads it, flicks it. Utkus kind of chests it, does very well not to handball it. It falls to Thibaut Sommers. He kind of just scuffs it in. On initial viewing, you're kind of saying Leysen should do better. But when I watched it again, like Schlever's, he's on the post. And he just like runs and he just comes and stands like right in front of him. Just enough to kind of put him off, and it's just he's just kind of there, just annoyingly in the way. And it's kind of like if people that play five-a-side football in goal, that centre back that just stands in, on the edge of the box in front of you the whole flipping time, you can't actually see anything that's going on, and they just don't move and they just put you off. So I think he was just frustrated that he probably could have done better by his own standards, but I feel like it's not as bad as it looked. But then they just shoot themselves in the foot, do Leuven, Joran Dom with a handball. Let deep into added time. He's like, I don't know what I was doing. I don't think half the crowd knew what he was doing. Kevin Dinkey steps up. He makes no mistake to make it 2-1 to Cercle Bruges. They escape Leuven with all 3 points. Leuven, on the other hand, they're now second bottom. And to be fair, yeah, the gap is definitely growing. They are now 5 points adrift of safety. It's just not looking good for Leuven at all at the moment.
Yeah, me and you were talking a little bit earlier on today, weren't we, Ben, about Leuven's form. And I happened to mention to you that since Mark Bryce was removed in October, their form's actually got worse. I mean, it wasn't great before, but things haven't gone well since Oscar Garcia kind of came in. Some of the body language has improved and maybe people feel a little bit better about themselves. But yeah, he's 4 defeats in his first 5 games. He's still looking for his first win in any sense of some momentum. And the longer this goes on, the longer, you know, you kind of worry for them. But yeah, I looked at that today, the Mark Bryce stats, and they've definitely got worse since leaving, which begs the question, and it is too early to judge Oscar Garcia yet, obviously. He's only been in for kind of 5 games, although he was around for the 6th one, although not in the dugout, obviously. You know, the question is going to get asked over the next 4 or 5 weeks, was that the right decision? And unless results start to turn a little bit in that time, then, you know, people are going to conclude that it wasn't. Admittedly, there's a lot of things going on inside the club around Mark Bryce's situation before he was removed, you know, where things got a little bit toxic in some ways and they felt they had no choice but to make that decision. But yeah, it's been a difficult start for Oscar Garcia. And this game, you know, they never really looked like getting the points in this one. Cercle, as Ben was saying, not at their best by any stretch, but certainly doing enough to get the win in the end. And Kevin Dinkey obviously getting another goal, is 14th, 14 and 18 to make him top scorer currently. He's enjoying himself this season. And Cercle have had, you know, a good week or so. You know, good win here against Leuven, and they'll be licking their lips actually at the prospect of their next game, because they have a Kortrijk at home up next.
They have some revenge to take there though, because they're one of the sides that have lost against them. So definitely not to forget that. First victory in Leuven since 2012 for Cercle Brugge as well. And I would say not really deserved, to be honest, unlike what Scott was mentioning here. If the game was over after the first half, they would have nothing to say about it. But Leuven did waste their chances, especially at that time. Didn't take the momentum enough. And Cercle and Dinkey actually scored twice ultimately to turn it around. Especially that handball it was already not about winning the game anymore for Leuven, but that handball must be very, very frustrating for them. At first, I thought maybe, he's still a bit in a duel and maybe his fault himself, but like his hand is up so high, like, yeah, you can't really make a case for it anymore. And, actually, maybe Leuven with this result have saved Kovelt, to come back to that point, with throwing this one away. But like I said, they should have killed the game before the Cercle equalized and became a bit better in the second half. But yeah, that's more or less how the season is going for both sides as well, I guess, summed up in this game.
Yeah, definitely. And Leuven face Erpen on Boxing Day. I thought they have to win that game at home as well. There's going to be so much pressure on it, but who knows? I mean, they've got three top scorers, all with three goals, and one of them is Hamza Mendel, who's a defender, and two of those goals of his came in one game. So that kind of, yeah, sums up their frustrating situation. Before that open game, they also played Ghent, actually, on Thursday. So maybe they'll nick something there. Who knows? But we'll see. Let's go to Brussels, where Molenbeek hosted St. Truiden. And it was the Makhtar Gay show. Who'd have predicted that? But he was on it. Technically, it was the Senegalese show in this one. Because yeah, it was just all the Senegalese getting involved. First goal from Gay. I think the assist was it from Kamara? I can't quite remember who played the free ball into him. I thought maybe there's an offside there, but actually he was miles onside. He runs through, puts it past Suzuki to make it 1-0. Suzuki had actually made a couple of decent saves before that as well, and I just felt that Molenbeek looked a little bit more on it, a little bit more kind of like, I just felt that there was this kind of mindset about them that we are going to win this game, like we're going to take it upon ourselves to win this game. I thought especially someone like Pierre Duomo in midfield, like, was really trying to run things around, like get himself about to make things happen. So Gay makes it 1-0. His second goal was a fantastic run. I trying to remember who was doing what in this game. I just could not work out with the stream I had who was running where, but I could recognise Makhtar Gay, and he finished after a really nice bit of play on the right-hand side. Maybe that was from Pathé Mboup. I think it might have been Pathé Mboup, who'd come on at half-time. He crossed it in, Gay tucks it in. They then spot one of the Molenbeek social media guys behind the goal with his camera out. Gay's like, oi, give me that. Takes it off him, and then just they start taking selfies and stuff like that. It's great. It's great to see. They kind of, you can see a bit more like kind of the team spirit between a couple of those players from there. Mboup then gets his goal. Lovely cut inside. Smashed it past Suzuki. It's going in, but then one of the St. Truiden defenders just makes sure it goes in by heading it into the goal. Gay could have had a hat-trick in this one. There's one opportunity absolutely had to score, but Bruno Godot made a really, really good last-minute save. So, yeah, a good performance for Molenbeek. They were happy for St. Truiden to have most of the ball, but when they had the ball themselves, they made it count for once. Just felt like an important win after that previous defeat. And yeah, Makhtar Gay scoring will be great news for them because they're so desperate for someone to score without Mikkel Beeren, and seeing Gay put the ball in net. And his link-up player, than Boop, and a couple of the other guys was really, really great. So fair play to Molenbeek for St. Truiden. They just never really felt the races in this one.
Yeah, I think that was an important one for Molenbeek. I think that was only their second win in the last 13, something like that. I was saying last week that it was starting to look a little bit grimmer for them. You know, they were on a kind of downward trajectory in terms of their form. But yeah, they deserved the win this weekend. And you mentioning it being the Makhtar Gay show, Ben, you know, I'm so glad you mentioned the moment with the social media member of staff, you know, taking that was a lovely moment. I really enjoyed that. You know, it's nice when players do things like that. I think that St. Truiden really struggled to cope with Makhtar Gay. They didn't really have a solution for him this week. Couldn't deal with him physically, and as you were saying, he could have well had more than the two goals that he did get. St. Truiden on the whole were pretty poor, I felt, certainly poorer than they have been recently. We've been talking about them dropping points that they probably shouldn't have for 3 or 4 weeks now. These were points, they never looked like getting anything out of this one. Joselfo Barnes starting instead of Kavi Zirhila Leslam, who obviously has a dislocated shoulder, which apparently is not as bad as we were led to believe. Torsten Fink, you know, rolling the dice and using what little resources he has at his disposal up front to try and score some goals at the moment. Red alert here. Same question around St. Truiden as there has been for probably a couple of months now. What are they going to do in the next couple of weeks when the window opens? Because we know where they need to plug. And it's the goal scoring issue that they really need to deal with, of course. But yeah, Molenbeek will just be happy to get some more points on the board again. They've got club at home before Christmas, and then Westerlo away. St Truden have a couple of games where they might see their chances of picking up some points being reasonable, important ones for them as well, actually. They've got Charleroi at home and Standard away, and they need to get, you know, a decent haul out of those two games before Christmas, because they could conceivably get sucked in as well because of the number of points they're dropping at the moment.
Yep, definitely they could. Yeah, only one shot on target says it all, I guess, as well, again, for them to make it short. But also, well, a shout-out. Like, there's not that much to say about them, Sint-Truiden in this game, I fear, but a shout-out to Robert-Jan van Wezemaal, who got his first start for the club in professional football as well, I believe. Well, there's one Sint-Truiden player, I mentioned him last week, coincidentally as well, Van Helden, who will be a bit frustrated as well. I guess he managed to head one ball away from goal off the line. I think that was still at 0-0. The shot from Duomo in the second half. He also did that, tried to do that at least, but unfortunately this time he couldn't do enough, so the ball went in off his head in the goal for, I think it was for the third goal from Boop. For Molenbeek, a lot of good things this week, of course. But a stat of the whole season that is quite interesting is that all of their goals have come from inside the box now. So still 22 goals. It's not that remarkable. There might be other teams. I didn't look into that too much into comparisons, but they definitely do need to score from inside the box. That's good to know for everyone, I suppose. And fourth clean sheet, first win in a month. Only second time this season they scored three goals as well. They haven't scored more than three either. They could have done it here also first home win in 3 months' time. So the home fans got something to cheer for after a long wait as well. Only their third home win of the season as well. Anyway, so yeah. Definitely a much needed win for them in many respects.
Yeah, no, definitely. And read a lot of stuff about how they're planning a nice little clear out in January as well. They're going to try and kick out a couple of players who have just there, really. There's a Bolivian forward who, Jofra, I think he is. He's been at Palace, Botafogo, and now Molenbeek, so you can see the links. You can see the system with which he's been in. He's 24 and he's played 135 minutes of professional football in his whole career. Not played for Molenbeek, didn't play for Palace. Mental, really. Wow. The bloke needs to go back to Bolivia and play for football, I think. Just go get your career going, man. Like, no point wasting away in Europe when he clearly must be a decent enough footballer if he's been within these systems. So fingers crossed he gets a move. Because I just read that, I was just like really depressed by it. So I was just like, this is it's just seeing players like not having a career is just quite sad. Like, who is that goalkeeper that played for Newcastle? Was it Steve Harper that everyone celebrated about him being on the bench all the time? I was like, he's wasting his career. Like, yes, he played for his boyhood club, but he just did what we all did, which is basically sitting in the stands. Always find it funny when you see keepers that are more than happy to sit on the bench, because I just find it a bit weird. Anyway, perhaps people that wishes they weren't in the stands this weekend were Standard Liège fans and Charleroi fans. They got to do some nice tifos and all that sort of stuff, but that was pretty much the only excitement in this game. But I think Sasha Tavolieri or someone on Twitter summed up by basically saying Wilfred Kanga didn't even have a shot, and he's standard striker. Like, no shots from him. I think there was only, about one shot on target for Standard. Charleroi had two. And basically, the game, nothing really happened until, I think it was in the second half, deep in the second half, actually. Isaac Mbenza comes off the bench, and suddenly he's through on goal just out of nowhere. And he should just, all he's got to do is put it past Bodart. Or I think he could have squared it to someone that was running through as well. And it's just the most tame shot, which basically summed up the game, in my opinion. It was a really, really poor effort from him. Finished 0-0, just a little bit of nothing. Jules Van Kleemput came back again. And I thought it was, I don't know, it's just the irony that Knežević goes down injured and you bring on Van Kleemput. And I'm like, he's more likely to just go down injured anyway, like coming on. Like the poor bloke's made of absolute glass at the moment. But it's good to see him come back and actually last 43 minutes. But yeah, not much to write home about for this one. And it's like I was just saying earlier, when yours brought it off about kind of these points gaps between the bottom sides, like Charleroi just are not building the buffer that they really should have been building. And I think the squad on paper should be good enough to build, but it's just not happening at the moment. And it's, again, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do in January, because they could easily be sucked in and just find themselves relegated if they don't kind of back their ideas up, I guess.
Yeah, well, me and Joris last week were talking about how it's getting very, very tight down at the bottom. And Ben's just kind of underlined that there. On Charleroi, actually, they're only scoring on average just a goal a game, just. So they're not even really above that. And that's pretty poor when you look at some of the players in that squad. As Ben was saying, they're just not performing anywhere near like their potential. Ben is also right in that the pre-match TIFO in entertainment was by far the best thing that happened in the Walloon Derby this weekend. Some colour, some noise, some energy, some entertainment and some action. Unfortunately, I saw all of this game, and that will be 90 plus minutes that I don't get back. I felt that they could have played all night and just not scored, which is a shame because there's always a reasonably big build-up to these big derbies, especially these big regional derbies, which we're all interested in. And this one, unfortunately, just fell sadly very, very flat, as some of these fixtures have done recently. Looking at their schedules coming up, they've both got some really important games coming up even before the end of the year. Charleroi have got St. Truiden away and Mechelen at home next. And if they can get some points there, they'll relieve the pressure a little bit, because obviously Mechelen are still in trouble recent weeks, actually. We'll get to talking about them shortly, but they really are getting sucked in a bit here again. Standard have got Mechelen away and St. Truiden at home, funnily enough, the reverse fixtures there. Both these sides need to get some points again here in these fixtures. If Standard could do well in those next two games, it would change the complexion of things for them, because they're only, by their own standards, managing to kind of keep their head above water a little bit as well. Both these sides are just really, really struggling to find the net. And have to try and find some kind of solution to that. Carl Hofkins this week was saying at press conferences that he expects them to be, as he put it, reasonably active in the January market. So that's a little hint that maybe Standard are going to try and bring in a little bit more than we thought they might, just to kind of beef things up a little.
Yeah, because the stats Scott mentioned here, Charleroi scoring one goal a game, while Standard have the exact same amount of goals as well. So, yeah. talking about another home crowd that isn't that hasn't seen that much fun this season. Okay, they had a few good results against the top sides again, but basically all their goals came in those games as well. They've got 8 goals scored and 7 against only as well. So, this, even with 8 goals scored only at home, they still managed to get a positive goal difference. But yeah, that's 15 goals in 9 games that you see. So for the entertainment, you actually, at least on the pitch, you do not really need to go to Sclessin this season.
You just go for the TIFOs, guys, and then you leave. You know what I mean? Until the entertainment factor improves, then, you know, unfortunately, that is the only reason to go at the moment.
Yeah, and I would leave early as well, because there was a lot of trouble actually after the game with the fans as well again. Just don't go there maybe even this season, temporarily. But very, very tame Walloon Derby on the pitch though, nonetheless. That's the supporters. Well, it's a sad thing that's of course also has happened, but that's the only thing that was not really tame about the game, I suppose. On Charleroi, still no away win. I think they must be one of the worst away sides. They got 3 points away from home, and all of those have been nil-nils. So that's underlining some of the issues Scott mentioned here again as well. Yeah, so that's so this with this point they actually do get out of the relegation zone for a little while, but indeed, is it enough? They maybe could have taken some more out of this game. They probably will feel like it as well. The only encouraging signs is in the something that Ben also touched on slightly with some players coming back from injuries, actually. In Van Kleemput, also in Kuba making. So Van Kleemput made his first minutes since March, and Kuba also made his first minutes of the season. I guess they can hope that these players do get to their older, especially in Kuba then, since he's a bit more attacking. Can contribute a bit more in the and maybe can could be considered as transfers, although that's always a bit of a lame saying, but in the sense of injured players coming back, I guess you actually can count it instead of rather than like you managed to hold the squad together there. It's a bit lame to consider someone not leaving as a transfer, but here like guess they should hope for that, and well, obviously they will need to do some business because, yeah, indeed. Well, these next two games might be really important. The things could look a lot brighter or a lot grimmer for either of those sides. Actually, still, and their opponents, especially actually.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's such big games for both teams that they're playing, and it's just you just feel like if they could go on a run, they probably would be fine. Like they just need to go on like a little bit of a run because they'd build probably such a big gap, but they've had so many chances to build this gap, and it's you see it in so many leagues around the world, not just in European football, where like a side's just kind of on, they're just safe, but because they're not building any momentum, suddenly a team from below will just go on a great run, like you say, and Scott Vesely could do that, and suddenly you're in there. But you've had your chances to do your own run and you've just missed it. You've missed your chance and now you're really, really stuck in that kind of relegation scrap. And so that from the outside looking, I just feel like that's what's going to happen. That could really happen to Charleroi or Mechelen. Like those are the kind of those two teams down there that you're looking at thinking, yeah, you could easily get completely sucked in and taken over by if two of the teams below you in that bottom four just go on a run. Let's turn our attention away from the bottom of the table for a little bit. Let's go to the Anvil for Club Brugge against Ghent. Both teams were in action in Europe during the week. Club Brugge beat Bodø/Glimt 3-1, securing top spot in the group, in the Conference League group. That means they don't have to play in the next round, which is a massive relief for them. More kind of time to focus on the domestic side of things. Ghent had the same opportunity. They could just needed to draw or beat Maccabi Tel Aviv in order to win their group, but they didn't do that. They lost 3-1 in Serbia. Their reward for that is a tie against Maccabi Haifa in the Conference League. Leo Rafaev's side, as some may remember him. We can, when you guys do your bit about the game, give me your kind of opinions on that. My opinion is they're going to mess it up. I just have absolutely no faith in Ghent in the kind of knockout stages of European football. Like last year, I thought they obviously did really, really well. And I felt they had their chances to beat West Ham. But I feel like this is going to be like when they, was it Pauk they lost to 2 years ago, where they were just by far the better team over two legs, but they just didn't get the job done. And my one fear is that this is going to happen against Haifa, because on paper they should beat Maccabi Haifa. Like they easily dealt with Maccabi Tel Aviv in the reverse fixture. They just completely messed it up during the week, and I don't know, you just feel like they've got that in them. But they went into the weekend's game against Club Brugge looking up and trying to hunt down those teams above them. Thought they should have had a penalty early on. They thought they should have had one when Vanna Mechelen appeared to grab Hugo Kuipers. Very controversial, this one. Lots of people saying they believe it should have been a penalty. Some people saying it shouldn't have been. Some people pointing to a foul in the build-up from Tissu Dali on Nielsen. I haven't seen the full replay, so I don't really want to like jump in on it and say, this is what I think. But like, obviously, if there was a foul in the build-up, then it would have negated it, I presume, anyway. I think Kuipers goes down a little bit softly, but we saw some soft penalties given, so you could see it being given. Club then get a penalty themselves. Again, there's controversy around this one. They thought that Rodriguez was offside, or Ghent thought that Rodriguez was offside. They just didn't draw the lines on the replays when they did it. But when you've now, I've now seen it with the lines, and it looks pretty much onside. It's tight, but he's onside. So they get a penalty eventually when Zinchenko is fouled by, I believe it was Sven Coombs. Thiago Rodriguez steps up to make it 1 on 24th minute. They then get another penalty when Candice just punches the ball away in the box to try and deny them a goal, gets himself sent off, just seems a little bit stupid to kind of shoot your team in the foot like that when they're already 1-0 down. It's kind of like, well, you could still come back from 2-0 down. Like, you've got the firepower on your side, but with 10 minutes, it's always going to be a lot harder. Rodriguez makes absolutely no mistake with the second one to make it 2-0. And then we just had the post-match, which was one of my favourite, funniest things ever. Just, I love it. Hein van Heijsenbroek just on his soapbox, just being like, yeah, well, we're in Bruges, aren't we? Basically. And it reminded me, if people have watched the Neil Warnock kind of documentary from his Sheffield United days, where he's in, I think they're playing Millwall, and they're just not getting any calls. And he's just like, it's because we're in London. It's because we're in London. Like, we're in London, aren't we? And I was like, this is Hein's thing. He's like, we're in Bruges. We're in Bruges. We're not going to get the calls here. We're in Bruges. Quite funny. And then he obviously this week wins the Gertels Award for the best Belgian coach. And then Vranken says, I think we need to VAR it to him, which was just, I love that. And he did laugh about it. But you could just see, they've got a great picture of him saying it. And Hein's face is just an absolute picture. He's just cracking up. So, yeah, good on Vranken. I thought that was absolute quality timing and comedic timing from him. It apparently controversial, but I feel like maybe the decisions were right. I don't know what you guys think, but from the kind of, I didn't watch the game, I've only seen the replays, and most of the decisions, I feel like you can kind of see where they came from. But then a lot of people are saying, have club been rewarded for their complaining from last week? Although Hein did also say, I'm not going to ask for the game to be replayed, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. It cracked me up. He was just fully on one. And sometimes there's nothing better for like entertainment value.
Yeah, well, Big Hein had a lot to say about the refereeing in this game, which was no surprise to anybody, really. He'd been talking about it a lot in the build-up to the game as well. He'd been hinting that, you know, they weren't expecting to get a lot of decisions because they were going to Bruges. So he'd laid the groundwork for the game not perhaps going the way that he would have wanted. I would much rather he'd spent a little bit of time this week after the game addressing why his side were actually so poor. I thought they were really poor this weekend. Again, I thought they were soft, in fact. That's the word I would use. Club bullied them in all the right ways. I think physically they dominated them. And there was a lot of kind of soft intimidation on their part, that's for sure anyway, which just kind of did the trick. And you kind of expect a little bit better from Ghent if they know they're going into a den like that one. So that was a little bit disappointing to kind of see that it was a reasonably one-sided affair. Don't get me wrong, Ghent had some chances, particularly in the second half, where they really had to have a goal because they were really up against it by then, but they weren't able to kind of take any of those chances. Club, we've talked about how their form is generally improving, undefeated in their last 10 now across all competitions, scoring 20 in those 10 games and conceding only 3. So, you know, we've talked about how the defence is improving. Offensively, they're sharpening up a little bit as well. So Ronnie Dyla will definitely be having a reasonably happy Christmas, I suspect. Thiago, 2 goals here. He's got 6 in his last 5 now in all competitions. And I said a number of weeks ago, I think I might have said it twice, guys, that I would start Ferran Jukla every day of the week ahead of Igor Thiago, and Thiago's obviously heard me and pulled his socks up because he's not only getting better, but he's producing the goods at the moment. So I take my hat off to him, and I do literally have a hat that I could take off, Igor, because I'll let you in all into a little secret. I did actually get a rather nice hat as a Christmas present. I haven't got it yet, but I know it's coming, so this is no joke, and I'll maybe show it to you at some point. But sure enough, yeah, you know, all the plaudits to Thiago this week. Can do Subban mentioned with a red card. That is the daftest red card you will see in ages. He thought that as well because, you know, it was one of those moments where, you know, he wanted the ground to just open up and swallow him up when, you know, when he got the red, which was, you know, inevitably coming. Absolute madness. And as Ben was saying, you know, just take the chance that, you know, they're going to miss the opportunity because you get a red card, you get a penalty, you're a man down and two goals down and, you know, the game is over in an instant. Whereas if Ben was, you know, his point is exactly right. Stay on the pitch. You've still got a chance, you know, when everybody's on the pitch. It was unfortunate. And yeah, the silver lining here for Ghent is a very personal one for Big Hein, as Ben was saying. You know, everything went wrong on the pitch, but off it, he came away with another gong this week, his second Gothels award since 2015 when Ghent lifted the title, of course.
Yeah, that red card, never gonna, yeah. That ball was also just, it was really not going in anyway, so that makes it even worse. It's like, well, it looked like at least, I can't really 100% say that, but the trajectory really looked like it would fly out anyway. Yeah, that's fly wide. Yeah, that's unfortunate, extra unfortunate. Yeah, that it's slightly similar to the bus against Kortrijk earlier in the season, but there, yeah, you can really say it was a reflex and like a millisecond reaction, but here there was a bit more time to think about the action. Well, that didn't happen enough, clearly, in this case. Yeah, for that's yeah, and that definitely kills the game. Second loss of the season for Gent as well. They do not like to go to Bruges. The first one was also there and was also 2-0, if I'm not mistaken, against Cercle. So, yeah. That's also a positive, of course. It's only their second loss of the season. But, yeah. And no penalty saves this time for Roof. Maybe Kandus thought, well, yeah, he already got one penalty in. Well, let one in. He's never going to let two in one game with his stats. But, yeah, unfortunately, it didn't work out. And, of course, they would still have been went down otherwise still. But, yeah. The other things I already wanted to mention also actually mentioned the quite clear ones for Club Brugge. Another clean sheet. Scott touched on their form. Thiago now got 7 goals in the league. I'll still make the little nuance that 4 or so more than half of those have been penalties actually. So yeah, that's still for a striker from a stop side, not necessarily a good sign, but he is definitely taking his chances lately, for sure. But yeah, I still remain a little bit more skeptical at the moment. But yeah, definitely, well, yeah, 4 shots on target against 2 shots on target, actually, it doesn't really tell the story of the game, but in a way, it still does.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, it definitely wasn't much of a battle of Flanders, and hopefully when they meet again quite soon, because they're due to play each other, of course, in the Cup in mid-January, hopefully that'll be more of a genuine battle.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, Ghent will still have, well, potentially still have Gift Orban, because obviously he's not going to the Africa Cup of Nations. Although, I don't know if you guys saw the provisional Nigeria squad, but Emmanuel Dennis is on there. He's played 8 games for Istanbul Başakşehir this season. He scored no goals. Ahmed Musa is on there. He's played 3 games for Sivasspor and he scored 1 goal. It's like, yes, Orban's had a pretty like rough season, but at least he's scoring. Like, these guys aren't even scoring. Like, I don't know if those guys make the final thing. I think if Musa makes the final squad, there will probably be riots in Nigeria over this, because they are just, I think so many of their fans are like sick of the sight of Ahmed Musa in Super Eagles teams. But Onyedika's there. He could potentially be going. So Club Brugge maybe without him for the Africa Cup of Nations and the return leg. One player who, I mean, if he's not there, there should be serious questions within the Algerian setup is Mohamed Amora. During the week, Union faced off against Liverpool, and you could tell he was well up for that game. Him and Cameron Puertas were absolutely fantastic. They ran out 2-1 winners over a very, very young Liverpool side. That still doesn't do it justice as to how many changes Jurgen Klopp made to this team for that game. But you still have to win. You still have to beat the side that's in front of you. Union managed to do that. They finished third in their Europa League group, which means they dropped down to the Conference League. And they will face Eintracht Frankfurt, which just to me was, it looked like the worst draw they could have possibly got out of all the teams that were available. Frankfurt, obviously, they've done well in Europe in recent years. Very, very good team. Very, very good kind of fan base and atmosphere there. But it's Union, essentially was. And every time you count them out, they show you that you're completely wrong. So I'm going to count them out because I know that they're going to win. They'll prove me wrong. I'm sure of it. I'm hoping for it. But back to domestic action. They were up against KV Mechelen at the Stade Josef Marianne on Sunday evening or afternoon. Not the most dominant of games, I guess, from Union. Actually quite even. Union did have 24 shots, eight on target. Mechelen, 15 shots and 8 on target. So they had the chances to get themselves into this game. Only goal came from Lapusan. He took a shot from outside the box. Kind of like was dipping before Kuch. He pushes it to the side, but not too far enough to the side. Mohamed Amour's diving header makes it 1-0. I've watched it a couple of times just to kind of see, like, right, is this just bad goalkeeping or is there also some defensive issues there? And there's definitely some defensive issues because Amour just is able to run straight through. No one follows him. No one expects that Kuch is probably going to, like, he's going to push the shot somewhere. Like, he's not going to catch this shot from Lapusan. They all just kind of turn and watch him, like, oh, good save, mate. Amour is there, puts it in, makes it 1-0. That's basically the game for Union. I believe that's what, 12 league goals for Amour in 13 games now. He's well on the heels of Kevin Denke for top scorer, and he's like played 5 less games, I think it is. So, yeah, you would say like Union might be concerned about him leaving in January for the Africa Cup of Nations, but then they've got still Dennis Eckhart to come, like kind of regain some fitness and stuff off the bench. So they'll probably be fine knowing them. And yeah, he definitely deserves a call up to the Algeria squad because he has just been fantastic since he's signing. And he's just really, really annoying, I think, if you're a defender, because he's quick. He wants to run at you. He wants to kind of put pressure on you. Sometimes a little bit kind of his finishing, despite him scoring so many goals, sometimes his finishing isn't as good as it can be. But at the end of the day, he's putting the ball in the net, and Union have just found another absolute stud out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, it turns out Mohamed Amoura does the leaping salmon as well as everything else in his natural game. Yeah, that was a fun goal to see, that one. Ben's right, you know, that lots of people at fault here. Kuch didn't necessarily parry that as well as he could have, and you know, defence is very static there, but you know, all credit to Mohamed Amoura, up went the salmon and in it went straight away, absolutely relentless. I didn't think that Union were at their best this weekend, but they certainly did enough to win the game. Interesting to hear Besnik Kazi afterwards talking about how he felt his side had did just enough probably to get a point. When you look at some of the chances he created in the second half, that's probably true. But if you don't take your chances, then it's not really an argument you can make. And that is the essence of Mechelen's problem at the moment. We know for a few weeks now, well, longer than a few weeks, probably a few months certainly, they've just been very blunt, particularly up top. The side is unbalanced. We know there's some important injuries there, but that side, yeah, they're unbalanced and they're really struggling to score. They're scoreless in their last three, and in fact, their last three goals came in one game, and that was against Kortrijk. And if we're being honest, that's not really saying very much because of who that is. They're actually one of the biggest underperformers in terms of their overall XG, and we know that's not an exact science, but when you look at the XG science on Mechelen's numbers, they're actually about 6 or 7 goals short of where they should be, and that's potentially another 6 or 7 points on the board for them. So Besnik Kazi's obviously identified what the problem is there. He will be absolutely desperate for that transfer window to open, along with Tim Matthijs, technical director at Mechelen, so that they can bring some bodies in and just kind of bolster that squad. Because if they don't, they really are, as we were alluding to earlier, in danger again of really getting sucked into this. And there's a real possibility that I think there might be a side in that mix down at the bottom who might unexpectedly fall at the final hurdle because of how tight it is getting there. So they need to do something, you know, reasonably dramatic in January, I think, because there are lots of numbers not going in the right direction for them again. And even some of the players there who we know have goals in their locker aren't really producing anything at the moment. And all of the tinkering that Besnik is doing isn't really making much of a difference for them. Looking at their fixtures coming up, Mechelen have got Standard at home and Charleroi away, which just underlines how tight it is down at the bottom. They, like those other sides, need to get something out of those. Union have Eupen away, which they'll be licking their lips about. And then there's a rather tasty game on Boxing Day where they go to the Jan Bridal to play Club.
Definitely one of the fixtures of that game day, for sure. Yeah, indeed. Mechelen maybe had the chance. Well, they definitely had the chances to at least score, whether they would have gotten the game or taken something from the game is still a different story. But they really did miss their chances they definitely had. But it also felt a bit like Union didn't really need to do more than they just did. Of course, if you're unlucky and a ball falls wrong at the wrong timing and it's too late to react, that could cost you points here. But they just didn't need to. And this time they play you when it runs out nicely. I guess you can say a casual win for them. But the fine margins again, of course. But yeah, they're again on track. Three league wins in a row already, plus a club win, plus the win in the Europa League against Liverpool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's five wins in a row again. In between, there was only a draw in the league. An unfortunate loss, of course, in Europe, which ultimately did cost them to go through it to the Europa League playoff round instead, rather than the Conference League one. But nonetheless, that fixture against Frankfurt will be an interesting one. The last season they also played a lot of German teams. Like for them, it seems to be more like the German League instead of the Europa League or the Europa Conference League or anything. This season, to be honest, it's not that often yet, of course, but nonetheless. But another main takeaway is, of course, they're extending their lead in the league now to 8 points. So they're 8 points clear at the top. That's starting to look like a big gap at this stage of the season. Of course, doesn't need to say anything yet, but it's better to be 8 ahead than not to be 8 ahead, I guess.
Yeah, I'll definitely take a nice 8 point gap over not having an 8 point gap. And I just wanted to quickly pick up on something you said, Scott, about obviously Mechelen's struggles at the top of the pitch. And it's just so weird, isn't it? Because for years, that's not been an issue for them. It's been the other end. But this year, like, it seems a weird thing to say, but of all the teams with a negative goal difference, theirs is the least bad. And that's actually quite a few teams. That's basically half the league. They basically would be in the top eight in terms of, like, I think they have the eighth best defence in the league. In terms of goal difference, like they've got a -6, and then a couple of other teams are in the sevens, tens, and then Kortrijk in the -27, which is just horrendous. So it's kind of like they're not as bad defensive they've been in past years, but they just can't score the goals. It's like they just can't put these two things together. And I'm sure a lot of Mechelen fans would prefer to go back to kind of the fun Franken kind of attack ball that was just so entertaining to watch, rather than this kind of like, we can't score and we're probably going to concede, but we're not conceding as many as we used to. Definitely work to be done for them in January. And I think for Union, they've come out and said, we're not selling anyone in January. We're keeping this squad together. I mean, if someone comes in and the valuations hit, they'll probably be like, well, actually, yeah, fine. But at the moment, their plan is to very much keep the squad together. Maybe add a couple of pieces if they want to, but I think they're quite happy with the core of what they've got, which, you can see why when they're 8 points ahead and playing as they are at the moment. And as you always said, winning casually when they can. Let's go to Antwerp against Anderlecht. Lots of the chat before this game is about Mr. Kasper Schmeichel. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that he doesn't look as mobile as he used to. Carl Hofkins went one further and just told his team to put it in the corner, and he won't get there, which is like, it's so Sunday league. It's just beautiful. Like, it's the one of those things that like you turn up on a Sunday like, afternoon, you look at the massive keeper with a hangover smoking a cigarette by the side of the goal, and you're like, lads, just stick it in the corner because he's not going to get there. But then to see someone say that about a Premier League winner, the son of one of the greatest goalkeepers that's ever played, was just so funny. And Brian Rema came out and was like, it's really disrespectful, blah, blah. Casper came out and was like, I don't care. I really don't care. It was great. It was so funny. So, yeah, all eyes basically on Kasper Schmeichel. And then Jean Boutte was like, but what about me? What about me, guys? No one's talking about me. So in the first couple of minutes, he decided to just drop the ball, throw it back over his head, just completely miss it from a crossing. Tia Leone then just whips in to head it in. He said he can't believe he scored with his head. He's like, I don't think I'm ever going to score in my head again. And to be fair, like, I hadn't actually seen the goal when I saw him talking. I was like, oh, maybe he's like scored a really nice header. And then I saw it. I was like, oh, to be fair, like, it wasn't like you were competing with anyone for the header, to be fair.
Christmas came early.
Oh, very early. It was a beautiful gift from Jean Boutte for Leone. And Boutte was just like, you could just see, it was just that classic moment of where someone just loses concentration. You can actually see him lose concentration and think about, right, when I get this, I'm going to throw it out there. I'm going to kick it out there. Forgets he's got to catch the ball. So, lesson for all those young goalkeepers out there, just keep concentrating. And then this game was I found it quite entertaining. Antwerp obviously coming off there, finally getting some points in the Champions League with a 3-2 win over Barcelona. That was a great game. Really, really fun watch. And it just made the question of where was that kind of, you just wanted that intensity throughout the whole kind of European campaign from Antwerp. But I know me and Scott, we spoke about it, that they'll learn lessons from this Champions League. And I feel like this is going to be, that game was the perfect kind of, right, we've learned now. This is how we have to approach the Champions League in every single match. They had a lot of kind of chances in this one, especially kind of near the end of the first half. And they just completely dominated the second half for me, Antwerp. They just were all over Anderlecht. Anderlecht, a couple of chances early in the second half on the counter, but didn't take them. And then it was just kind of handball style. Antwerp parked outside the Anderlecht box, just trying to find their way in. And Anderlecht, to be fair to them, defending really well in and around their box. I think they weren't kind of pressing too high and pushing too much when Antwerp had it on the edge. But the moment it came into the box, your Vertonghen, your De Bast, your Sardella as well, like putting their bodies on the line for the cause, basically. Schmeichel made a couple of saves. They weren't in the corner. I can say I was checking to see if they'd be in the corner. Nothing in the corner for him to have to deal with. Time winding down, it's like maybe, just maybe Anderlecht are going to hold on to this one. But Van Bommel's chucked on Georgi Elenikena at this point, the man that kind of rescued them at the midweek, and he did it again. Duque, again, he had a really good game against Barcelona, just completely leaves Augustinsson for dead. Ball into the box. Adavira just completely hits it or heads it, whatever he's trying to do with it. But Elenikena is there at the back post to tuck it in. Not sure we can blame Schmeichel for this. I don't think that'd be quite fair on him. Maybe he could have been there quicker, but I mean, it's point blank range. I did see some newspaper kind of articles being like, has Kasper Schmeichel won any games for Anderlecht yet? So it feels like the Hofkins stuff and now this, it's like he's coming under a bit of pressure. It's just the goalkeeping situation there is really interesting and slightly weird, in my opinion, anyway, in terms of like what. Like the whole summer was a bit odd in terms of Schmeichel and Dupé. It seems a little bit weird. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, Antwerp does deserve a point, at least. I thought the second half they were fantastic. But then at the other end of things, like I've already said, Anderlecht's defending was good. So, really, really fun game, really enjoyable game, great atmosphere. A lot better than the Walloon derby that we had to watch the previous evening.
Yeah, well, this was undoubtedly the best game of the weekend, I thought. We actually had some entertainment and some action. There's a lot of games this weekend that were a bit flat. ranging downwards to non-existent. But this was a good game, actually, pretty entertaining. I'm glad Ben mentioned Anderlecht's defending, because I've noted down here really good defending, hard-fought point, compact in brackets. I thought the defending was excellent. I thought Augustinsson had a pretty decent game. And I think Anderlecht would have, probably feel a little bit disappointed not to have got the win, considering how late they conceded. But having said that, Antwerp deserved at least a point. They were pretty good. And I think, but for some wrong choices in their passing and decision-making at key moments, could quite conceivably have won this game. I think, when you look back at the chances they had and the pressure in the game. So from an Anderlecht perspective, I think it's a really hard-fought point. Anderlecht, interestingly, are, and again, I'll underline the XG argument about it not being an exact science, their XG numbers are actually quite interesting, because although they're right on the coattails of Union at the moment, they're actually outperforming their XG by a fair bit at the moment, which is a little bit surprising. But they've got a good mix going on there at the moment. Really good game this. I was impressed by Chidera Aduke again. We've talked about how good he's been recently, continuing to impress. I thought he had a really strong game. Antwerp fans in particular were expressing how disappointed they were not to get the win in the end. A lot of the mainstream media in Belgium were commenting on the fact that they felt that, Anderlecht played very well for the majority of the game. Perhaps they should have used the word defending well rather than sort of playing well, and that seemed to be kind of missing, because I think that was something that they weren't really given enough credit for this weekend. You've got to take advantage of those early Christmas gifts, which Taylor Leone did. Nobody that small should really score a header. It's probably worth underlining that, which, is why it's come this week, just ahead of Christmas, isn't it?
For once, I do agree with the media, though. I did find Anderlecht playing really well. They should have killed the game in the first half again as well. I felt a slight different. So I do feel like a draw is probably a fair result as well, but... Boutet making up for his mistake in that goal against, in a 1-on-3-1 against with Dreyer, that could have decided the game all early on. And of course, there was another shot on, that was less of a clear cut chance, but still some mood work saving Antwerp in the game. I was actually really impressed by Anderlecht, at least in the first half specifically. And also doing that while playing with a lot of, it's not a new thing, but like maybe it actually gets a little bit under snowed by the results, but actually they're actually doing it with quite a few youngsters in the squad now in the starting 11, this time also with Delaney, being out sick in the last seconds, and Riemer just went to put Struik is on his place a bit lower than he usually plays. They combined really well in the first in the first half. Of course, Antwerp still also had their chances. So, obviously, and by the end of the game, and it was more of Antwerp, that also skews opinions a bit as well at the end, I think. The Pute does. I'm not going to write him up for this one mistake, but he does in general seem a little bit less secure this season than he had been last season. It's not the first time he made some terrible mistake this season, and last season I don't really recall one. Probably some things that he could have done better, but not a real big mistake like this. But for Antwerp also, there's one player still outperforming Amoura at the moment, which is Ile Nikuna. He's averaging 18 goals, per 90 minutes so far, and that at 17 years old. And of course, also it's not about just scoring once in a very short sub. That already is. What is it now? Fourth or fifth legal, I believe. Or anyway, I'm actually also not sure. Maybe this is even a grand total with also the cup games included. And also there he scored before already. So, he's getting there. He's really settling in the league actually quite fast. In the beginning of the season, it all looked still very raw. It still is raw, but he did definitely get on. Found his scoring boots.
Yeah, he's quite exciting to watch, isn't he? I quite enjoy kind of watching him play. He's like, he's got the physical aspects that you need to play in the Belgian Pro League, I think, doesn't he? Like, I know, Scott, you always mention that it's such a physical league, and it just feels like he's like, yes, he's 17, but I don't know, if I looked like that at 17, I've been well happy. Like, I'd be terrified if he was like, can you imagine going into the changing room, like PE changing rooms at 17 or 16 with him? You'd be like, oh, looks like a man. He's quite physical, but I like what I've seen from him. I just feel like he's going to be a really, really good player just based off of that. And then, yeah, one more shout out to Aduke, because I feel like I've got to keep doing it for this guy. He's just, I think in his last three games, he's created the most chances in every single one. Maybe even his last five, I think. I think the Charleroi game, I think he did. Circle Bruges, he definitely did. Barcelona, he definitely did. And then this game, he created five. So he's by far and away creating the most chances for Antwerp. It's just these aren't translating into assists for him yet, which is a real shame. But hopefully they will eventually. Maybe he just needs to pass it like in the kind of once he's come off the bench, and he'll kind of get some improved kind of assist numbers. But yeah, he's been really, really fun to watch. And seems like they're kind of like last year when they like Stengs. It's kind of this time of year they kind of moved him into central midfield, and it seemed to click and it seemed to work. And it feels like Aduke's come in, he's kind of the Stengs loney, but it's working for him on the wing, which is where they really needed someone to be effective within the system that they play. So yeah, hopefully he can keep it up. And he, as far as I remember, is not on the provisional 40 list for Nigeria, so he will still be there in January for Antwerp. Let's go to the final game, which was Genk against Kortrijk. Another player who could potentially be off in January is Joseph Pintsel. He got things started with this one, but we've got to talk about the pass that kind of set up this first goal, which deserved to be the actual assist for the goal. It's so frustrating it wasn't. Bilal Al-Kanous just outside of his foot, through like the defence towards Yirasaw. I'll say he lays it off to Pintsel. I think it's just a bad touch that eventually finds Pintsel. Pintsel shoots, terrible shot, just straight at Tom Vandenberg. But the ball comes back, Pintsel follows up and tucks it in to make it 1-0. Into the second half we go, and clearance from, I believe it was Radovanovic, falls straight to Hrzowski, doesn't even take a touch, just pings it straight through to Yirasaw, who's running through. He tucks it home to make it 2-0. Pintsel then makes it 3. Heenan then scores from the spot to make it 4. It finishes 4-0. We might have to put an explicit warning on this episode, because in an interview after the game, Radovanovic said, "We're fucking shit." He's like, "I don't know what's going on, but we're just shit." I just thought it was hilarious. In Vince's words. So a great win for Genk, who I think are also looking for a potential replacement for Arteaga in January. They think, because Kiembe is probably going to be off to AFCON as well with the Congo, so with the DRC. So they may be looking for another left back. They might be quite active then, but they need to line up the replacement before they can sell Arteaga. So there's lots of different moving parts going on there. But Joris, would you describe this one as another casual win, a casual win for your boys after massive disappointment in Europe? I forgot to mention that. I'll quickly mention it now. Genk needed to win and they needed results to go their way. They managed to do their bit. They beat Kukaliki 2-0 at home. However, Fiorentina were unable to beat Ferencvaros in Hungary, which means Genk crash out, despite losing just one group game in the competition. But it was the draws at the end of the day that have absolutely killed them in that competition. But maybe they can now focus more on the domestic side of things. But anyway, I'll hand over to Joris to talk about kind of the fallout from that and what looked like, from, I only watched the first 60 minutes because I turned it off after the fourth goal, a casual win for Genk.
Yeah, it definitely was. Not really much to say about this game. I guess Kortrijk it's not the first battering they've taken this season either. And also not the worst one even, which is the worrying sign for them, to be honest. But this game, after 5 minutes, it was actually already quite clear. 2 minutes, maybe even. There were a few big chances. They actually should have scored already earlier. The only thing that you can remark is that indeed they should have killed the game in the first half already. But okay, if you do it in the 15 minutes afterwards, I'm not going to complain either. But yeah, And about Europe, well, yeah, that the other result was anyway, the game between Ferencváros and Fiorentina was always going to be a draw. I did have literally 0% hope that it would be differently, because especially since it was in Fiorentina in first place, and which is like the logical order was a bit respected there. And then, yeah, so ultimately it's the draws, and of course, a little bit, of course, in that sense, then the schedule, the drawing schedule, that's the, that's cost king there. Yeah,
it could have been definitely. I can confirm to everybody, we should tell everybody this, shouldn't we, that what Joris was saying about that result that his side needed not going to happen was in fact what he said before the game. He said he had absolutely no belief that that was going to happen at all, and he was proved right. That's one correct prediction this week.
Yes, probably the only one, but although, well, I think I also would have predicted Genk winning against Kortrijk here, to be honest, even despite the form. But yeah, it actually is the first time this season that Genk have won three games in a row, including the, yeah, that final game in Europe, that is, of course. But nonetheless, yeah, hopefully they're on a good track now. But with the KVAT, of course, it was against Urbe and Kortrijk in the league, and against Kukarici, the also already defeated side in Europe. So also games they should win, but they have failed a bit to do so in recent weeks and months. So it's good that they did this. And now they're at least in a good position before their upcoming fixtures. The first one against Anderlecht this weekend, and on Boxing Day at home against Antwerp as well. Yeah, so to take on these sides who at the moment are placed higher than them in the table still, but only a few sides that are higher, and at least they're in a bit. They made up some points with winning those two games to a lot of those teams actually already. So let's hope. I hope at least that they can continue on that track. Yeah, and let's see how it goes with everything. Yeah, and that the left back, we'll see what happens there. I don't expect much action in January, but that would be apparently a position where something could move. Wait and see, I suppose. Is there anything else? Yeah, I really like. Ben already stole. Was waxing lyrical about pass from El Canoes already. Yeah. I also just want to stress, it's not the only time that this happened. And like that, I know it comes back still sometimes, his lack of statistics, but it's not only up to him, sadly. So
he's getting better all the time, by the way. I think he's getting better all the time, and just doesn't seem to get nearly enough credit, I don't think. Some people are aware of him, but you know, sometimes it's just little moments in games, I think, Joris, but there's just one or two passes that are better than 20 other passes by another player in a game, you know, just, yeah. Real talent. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and like, yeah, of course, it's still a thing, of course, yeah. Also a bit because Genk probably underperforming a bit this season. Like, if he can carry the side indeed to a bit higher still, then, there's still room for that, of course. But, yeah, I'm already a bit afraid for the AFCON, because he will most definitely also be there in we'll have to see what happens with the Genk side there, then, of course. But the squad is also, at least in quantity, is filled. So we'll see what happens there in this. Yeah, all in all, I don't know how many games that would be. It also potentially would be, of course, but the few games that they would be missing, bad that would be for the side. But yeah, I think we can just talk about Genk here, because not because I like to do that, but just Kortrijk, there really is nothing much to say about them here. They were very bad, underlining how bad their season is going. One shot on target, maybe that's one stat to mention as well. And that was not a difficult one either, if I recall right. So yeah, still looking more grim for a still managerless, well, okay, caretaker manager Akpala, of course, but apart from that, managerless Kortrijk side, and I'm not sure who they will be convincing with performances like this.
Yeah, well, they've got they're winless in eight now in the league, aren't they, guys? Only four goals in those last eight games. Some other numbers just to underline their predicament. average goals per match, 0.7. Average goals conceded this season per match, 2.2. Average shots on target, just touches 3. And they've now got the worst defence as well. After this weekend, they've leapfrogged Oipen for having the worst defence. So they're in miracle territory now.
Yeah, man, it comes after good friend Glenda Bock and his magic coat did that interview talking about everything that was going on there, which I thought was fascinating and hilarious at the same time. He's talking about, he said the practice fields are so bad, they used to joke about who was going to let the cows back in at the end of the training sessions. he then said they went 14 days without any hot water, so the players couldn't shower. And you're just like, the stink, oh, the stench must have been horrible. Like 30 blokes who've just done some training, sweating, and not able to have a shower. He said him and the local guy to go and try and fix it up. And then interestingly, I noticed, I haven't seen if there was a reason given, maybe you guys know, but no Kadri this week. And he had some words to say about him as well, about how he didn't see him as a captain. So obviously he took the captaincy away, gave it to Charles Silva. That then didn't go down well with Kadri. This is all what Glenda Bock said, by the way. This is just kind of, I'm just repeating what he said. That apparently didn't go down well with Kadri's kind of entourage, as they're always known these days, because basically he'd been given the captaincy to keep him at the club. Like everyone knew that was the case. It was the most obvious thing in the world. But De Bock basically said, kind of like he was the last one at training and he's the first one to leave, was kind of his saying. And it's just, you can kind of see why the situation is as it is. It must just be like, it'd be a fascinating place, I think, to go and spend a week watching them train and just seeing like what is actually going on there, because it's just so bizarre and quite depressing for them. But yeah, if you haven't read it, go read Radovanovic's interview, because he doesn't mince his word about the predicament they're in. And he said he basically has no idea how they're going to get out of it. And when a player's saying that, you just feel like if that's the kind of the mentality of one of your kind of more experienced players, it's just like, well, that's just going to seep through all the rest of them. There's a lot of young players there who are probably just like, this is not what I signed up for when I decided I wanted to become a professional footballer. So, yeah. Another side that should be active in January, but probably won't be because the owner doesn't care. He just wants to sell it, but he's losing value every single week. He's only kind of got himself to blame, in my humble opinion. So, yeah, we'll see what happens in courts. Like, before we go to the Challenger Pro League, let's go to a listener question. It's from one of our long-time listeners, Matt J. Ball. Thank you very much, Matt, for getting in touch. He says, my mate who is a Chelsea fan would like to know how Gabby Salina, or I've called him Gabrielle Salina, is doing at Erpen. Obviously, it's a team that's shipping goals for fun, but how is he doing individually? Scott, I believe you went and looked up some stats on this one. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, well, I went away and kind of looked at his basic numbers. I think on the whole, he's actually doing okay. You can't read really anything into the fact that he's playing with what up until this weekend was the worst defence, now just the second worst defence. The main thing for the loan was for him to play regularly, and he's doing that, and he's going to be kept plenty busy in that side, that's for sure. He's going to be facing a lot of shots, probably a higher than average number of penalties over the course of the season as well, and getting plenty of shot-stopping practice because of the side that he's playing in. His save percentage over the season is round about the 67% mark, so for a side who are in real trouble and struggling, at the back, that's not too bad. The one element of his game that I think is pretty strong, and has always been, is his distribution. His ball distribution and his accuracy is actually very good, so he's good with his feet. So he's definitely been an addition to this side, I think. The loan is unlikely to go beyond this season, I don't think. I think they will want him to go somewhere else, perhaps, when the loan expires. But from the point of view of Oipen and their recruitment, it's been a decent acquisition, and he's working hard to reduce the deficit as much as possible.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, he's actually not the worst goalkeeper in the league. I think he's actually doing a good job. Is it enough? Yeah, of course he has had his moments. He had a few moments where he could have done better. Last week was one against Chink, for example. And that's the main one that jumps into mind. But before, earlier in the season also, but not more than any other goalkeeper has for like a goalkeeper of his age. What is he, 19 indeed? Yeah, that's it's understandable that this happens, even if it happens a little more, which is not the case than with other keepers, as we saw this weekend as well. More experienced and more established keepers in the league also still make some mistakes sometimes. It happens to all of them. I think he's doing a decent enough job. The step to Chelsea is, of course, always a big question. It's a very big step, but yeah. I think he's definitely learning a lot in this season. So I think from Chelsea's point of view, this is work and his person for every party involved is actually not a good deal so far, I would still say. Regardless of where the team itself is standing in the league, it's definitely not his fault.
Yeah, I mean, getting into that Chelsea, you could just become one of their perennial loan players. Like Lucas Piazon was there for he must have been there for like 2 decades, I swear. That bloke just kept getting loaned out. Loads of them did, actually. Who's the other one? There was an American centre-back. Basically, Reading used to get all these guys on, loads of these guys on loan. Matt Miazga, that's the one. He was there for years as well. Never had a chance of getting in the first team, but got to go on loan to lots of places. So, yeah, I guess it's a fun situation to be in. And to be fair to Slonina, I think we've also got to remember that there was that kind of period of, I think it must have been like 3 or 4 weeks, where Runa Pacius was trying to do his very best to make sure they were the worst defence in the league by just doing everything in his power to mess up and just put the poor guy under pressure. So he'll definitely come out of this with some kind of a good level of experience. And I think going to a club like Open as well, like a very kind of, in terms of fan base and structure and all that, like a small club within the Pro League, and then having to go to places like Liège, Brussels, Bruges, like he gets to go to all these kind of stadiums where there will be a bit more of a raucous atmosphere, more so than he'd ever probably have in England. Quite like, honestly, let's be honest, like a couple of the grounds you go to in England just aren't that intimidating compared to somewhere like Schlesen. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a good experience for him, and I think it will definitely do him well. Whether he ends up being the number one at Chelsea or not, he'll definitely come out the better of it. Let's dive into the Challenger Pro League, which is where Erpen might be next season. So Chelsea definitely won't be loaning him back to them if that's the case. Scott, over to you for another week in the old CPL.
Yeah, well, we've reached CPL match day 16. If you didn't see the results this weekend, quick roundup for you. Dender and RFC Liège drew 0-0. Zulte Waregem managed to get a last gasp win against Sarang and win 2-1 with two very late goals, actually. Patro Eisden won convincingly 4-0 against Club Next. Anderlecht Futures and Oostende finished goalless. Beveren won 2-1 against Jong Genk. Frank Baran lost 3-1 at home to Beerschot. Denza got another last gasp winner. They beat SL 16 2-1, and Lommel got their first win in 8, winning 3-0 against Liers. So in terms of the overall picture, Zulte are back top, but only on goal difference from Beerschot. Denza are up to third now after winning 4 of their last 5 and are now 3 points off an automatic promotion spot. So they're really kind of cruising up the rear, unnoticed really somewhat at the moment. Patro Eisden, they're up to fourth. They've won 4 of their last 6. And one of the informed sides at the moment that nobody's really talking about is Beveren. They're up to sixth, which is their best position this season, into promotion qualification contention for the first time. Only 6 points off an automatic spot at the moment. They're undefeated in their last 8, winning 6 of them. So the leadership at Beveren holding firm and keeping Wim de Decker seems to be starting to turn a corner for them at the moment. We don't know whether that's going to turn into anything magnificent at the end of the season. We'll have to wait and see. But I take my hat off. I was doing it earlier to Igor Tiago. I'm doing it to the leadership at Beveren now, because we, much like a lot of Beveren fans, did say that we felt that maybe it was time for a change, because things were starting to look a little bit toxic for them after that awful start to the season. But they seem to be kind of, you know, getting their house in order now. Top scorer is still Adriano Bertoncini, by the way, guys. He's still on 11 goals. I just wanted to give, actually, a big shout out this week to, we'll drop down a further division into the first amateur division, Lokeren, who Belgian football fans will know, of course, went bankrupt way back in 2020, reformed, started way down at the bottom of the pyramid, are now on course. They're cruising towards their second successive promotion. Their form recently has been sensational. Check these figures out. So they've just reached the end of the first round of fixtures in the First National. Lokeren are top of the table, undefeated in 17 games, winning 15 of those, drawing two, 47 out of 51 points, winning their last 12 games. Absolutely exceptional stuff from the East Flemish club, who, as I was saying there, are cruising towards back-to-back promotions and very much look like they'll be playing Challenger Pro League football next season. Lokeren are a club who, little bit of history here, folks, they've done some stuff, of course. They were Pro League runners-up in 1981. They reached the quarterfinals of the UEFA Cup that season as well. And they've also won the Belgian Cup twice in 2012 and 2014. So they're no strangers to those who know the Belgian football scene. But yeah, absolutely exceptional run of form they're on at the moment. And just wanted to give a big shout out to them, because they're not getting any credit for that, unfortunately, because of the division they play in. And also a little shout out to the team below them in second, RAL, who are also undefeated. The form they're on at the moment isn't too different to Lokeren. So both of them absolutely cruising at the moment.
Yeah, some incredible numbers for Lokeren there. That is just absolutely ridiculous. Quickly jump back to the Challenger, then yeah, pick up on Lokeren as well, because I've got a bit I want to say about them. But just kind of some stuff that read around kind of coming out from there. Obviously, everyone knows about Oostend, probably about how they're in financial issues. They are now taking Bologna to court over a transfer that happened in 2021, the Yata to Yata transfer. They're saying there's been some unpaid dues there. The statement was quite kind of like funny, in the sense of they're like, we sold you this player and then you've gone on to make millions out of him, and you're fourth in Serie A, you can pay us the money you owe us. And I just feel like the timing of it's quite kind of fitting, I guess, because they're so desperate, they need some money. I feel like there's someone that's been kind of in the background looking for all the old transfer deals that they've done, just being like, where can we find some money from that? Where can we make sure that, like, someone must have missed the payments? It'd turn out it'd be like 50 quid or something. But no, hopefully it does get resolved. But it just made me think, like, yeah, they've just been like, right, we need to find some money from someone. Let's do that. Another kind of one of just checking out, like, We spoke about it at the end of last season. Salang very much in trouble of that back-to-back relegation, and it's just not surprising at all, like, given the situation we saw them in last year. And it just shows that, like, you can easily, like, even, like, you can go down to the Challenge and you can completely plummet still, very much like you kind of get in other European leagues, where if you don't consolidate and invest in the kind of the future and stuff, that is what can happen, and that is definitely what's happening there. And yes, last bit on Lokeren, a bit of a shameless plug, I guess, for me. But while writing my book on the Africa Cup of Nations, there was a player that played a lot for Lokeren who became an absolute hero for the Ivory Coast, Boubacar Bally, or Copper Bally, as he was also known. Played a bit for Beveren, but he played, yeah, well over 200 games for Lokeren. Was involved in those cup wins, you said, Scott, as well. He was the man that scored the winning penalty for the Golden Generation, as they were called, of the Ivory Coast when they won in 2015. Didn't play a game that tournament until the final, basically. Gabuhu, the number one, have been fantastic all tournament. He gets injured before the final. Boubacar Barry comes in, wins another trophy. Just a legend. Absolutely love him. And yeah, he was very much involved at Lockwood. I don't know if he's gone back. I believe he has gone back there before to do some coaching and stuff, but I'm not sure if he's there now. But I know he was kind of, he's more than like happy to get involved there. I know he's got a lot of love for the club. So yeah, nice to see them coming back in, hopefully and to the Challenger next season.
To circle back to the Challenger Pro League, his son, Kais Barry, is playing for Anderlecht Futures now and has made 17 minutes in the Challenger Pro League this season so far. He's a big talent in the Anderlecht Academy as well. Yeah, to also circle back to stay in the Pro League, then to Scott giving the taking his hat off for Wim de Dekker. Much like with Thiago, I will nuance a bit here because I don't think they will. Well, if you look at the result, yes, but I don't think they will really say things are really going well when they easily could have lost the game against Jong Genk this weekend. That it's. Yeah, Jong Genk like a bit of the issue they had the all season are missing some efficiency up front at times, and they didn't manage to do enough in this game to pull it over the line either. But just nuancing a bit there. I do not know how it was in previous weeks for Beveren, but if this would be a game that I can lean it on, like. They're not there yet, but it's good for them. They're at least getting some points.
Yeah, they're on a nice little run at the moment for sure. And at the end of the season, if they get into the top two, they'll just look back at that game, won't they? And be like, yeah, that's some 3 points. I'm thinking maybe in the new year, guys, we'll have to introduce a section that's like, who is Scott taking his hat off to this week? Like Scott's stuff of the week. Scott, you can just pick someone and we'll get you different hats every week that you can kind of like take off to everyone.
If you're lucky, guys, if you're very, very lucky, I might actually wear it for a recording one week.
I'm expecting big things.
I do like to move that hat away then a little bit later in the episode. Like generally, that's something I tend to do.
I think maybe, yeah, I don't know, if you want to help get behind the fund for Scott's various hats, time to plug our buy us a coffee or buy me a coffee, I believe it is, isn't it? So we've set up a buy me a coffee account, donation account, whatever you call these things. Thanks so much to everyone that's donated to it already. It's been just fantastic. It's so like kind of humbling to see all the support we've had and how much you guys do enjoy the podcast. As we said on previous episodes, if you've missed it before, this is completely going towards playing for the platform that we use to record our episodes. We're not taking any of it back ourselves. It's very much to help kind of the production of the podcast and stuff like that, and just to hopefully produce more content that you guys want and that you guys enjoy. So yeah, there'll be a link in the episode description below, or you can also go onto our social media, onto our X or Twitter, whatever you call it now, account, and you'll find a link to it there. Please do consider it. If you've been a long time listener, it really does kind of help us, yeah, pay for this stuff, because unfortunately it's not cheap, and we've done our fair share of free trials of different platforms, and we quite like this one, and we don't really want to have to get used to a new one. Especially for yours doing all the editing and stuff, it's nice if he's got just one platform that he can just download everything for. It makes it a lot easier. So yeah, that's a plug for Buy Me a Coffee. Anything else, guys, before we wrap up this episode?
I think we've covered more than enough, which is just as well, because we're going to be taking a little festive break, aren't we, guys?
Yep, like Scott mentioned here, like most likely, no, actually, we won't be there next week, unfortunately, for you guys, for our listeners, but we will be back sooner than you think.
Absolutely, yeah, we're going to take a little bit of time off over the Christmas period, and then, yeah, we'll be back once the league resumes in January as well. In the meantime, if you do have any questions, though, please do feel free to send them over. We'll either answer them in the next episode, or we'll just answer them straight up, depending on how you send them. And as always, if you've enjoyed this episode and the podcast this year, please do leave a review on your podcast app of choice. And yeah, this is the final episode of 2023. Thank you so much for being with us for another year, if you have been. If you've just discovered us this year, welcome aboard. It's great to have you. Hopefully you're enjoying us taking you through the crazy world that is Belgian football. There's plenty more to come in 2024. yeah, have a safe and enjoyable festive time if you do celebrate that. If not, any time off you have, just enjoy it. And we'll speak to you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.